Well, as I say, the text is Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 8. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. And of course, that's why I chose that hymn just now. The second verse, oh, the deep, deep love of Jesus, spread his praise from shore to shore. How he loveth, ever loveth, changeth never. Nevermore. And as I said also, that text is on the wall in the room beyond the dining room. I wonder how many of you have thought of the chorus by A.B. Simpson. Yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I expect we could sing it, couldn't we? Yesterday, today.
Yes, the whole hymn is in the
redemption. Is it? Yes, well, actually, I copied the hymn out.
It's in the book.
I thought I did. Yes, I did. Here it is, yes. If you know the hymn, I don't know the hymn, I know the chorus. Oh, how sweet the glorious message, simple faith may claim. Yes, you know it?
Yes.
But you know the chorus. Yesterday,
today,
forever, Jesus is the same. Go on then. All may change, but Jesus, glory to his name. Yeah. The chorus I know goes on, glory to...
That's
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Same.
That's all right. Okay. So we all know that chorus, and we know the text on the wall, and so on. Now, I want to make a suggestion to you, more than a suggestion. I'm not taken away from that, okay? And in the coming days, if that chorus comes back to you, do you get musical worms? You know what I mean? Sometimes you have a tune that goes through your head. Well, I don't mind this week if you get that chorus going through your head. Yesterday, today, forever, Jesus is the same. But this morning, I want to try and lift our eyes, if it were, higher than that. Now, what do you mean by that? Well, I'll explain. I believe this text has suffered very much indeed, in my own mind. I confess it. It was pointed out to me recently by a sermon I heard, by Dick Lucas, in fact. And I believe he was right. He was pointing out that this text often appears, Jesus Christ the same, yesterday, today, forever, appears on calendars, a tear-off calendar. And of course, as I said, it's framed on the wall. It's a text on the wall. And it's a nice text to put in a card, isn't it? It's very short. It's clear. It's just made for it. Unfortunately, the writer to the Hebrews, when he wrote his letter and he put this text, this verse, not that he wrote in verses, when he put it in the last chapter, not that he wrote in chapters, but when he put it towards the end of his letter, he wasn't thinking of having it framed and put on a wall. And he wasn't thinking of having a tear-off calendar. He wasn't thinking of birthday cards or whatever, okay? He was engaged in something very serious indeed. I don't know if I've told you, but I've told others, and I'll tell you if I've told you before, I'll tell you again. I am convinced that the letter to the Hebrews is the second most important passage book in the whole Bible. I would put Romans at the top, but very close to it, I would put Hebrews. And I am also convinced that the letter to the Hebrews is something which is so significant and so relevant today. And I think many believers are not well acquainted with the letter that this man wrote to the Hebrews. And it's a great pity. I think many, many mistakes are being made because people do not know, do not understand and follow out the teaching of Hebrews. This man is getting towards the end of his letter. Now, he has been very passionate in his letter. Read it through for yourself and you'll see I'm not making it up. He has something which is a tremendous burden to him, and he's had to discharge it. I believe he is writing to fellow Jews who have been converted, but for some reason or another, these fellow Jews have grown weary. Maybe it's persecution. Whatever it is, something is taking them away from the gospel. And there is a tendency amongst them, you can read it in the letter, to go back to Judaism. Now, let me be frank about this and clear about this. I can sympathize with them to a certain extent. Let me explain what I mean. Have you ever thought what it must have been like in the days of the Old Covenant, the temple and the tabernacle, what it must have been like for Jews in their worship of God, in their service of God? Can you imagine what temple life must have been like with all those sacrifices, with all those priests and all their vestments and all the incense and all the choirs, the music and the instruments? I was speaking earlier this morning on Psalm 150. Drums, dancing, trumpets, harps. It was a magnificent show, wasn't it? Look at the temple. Look at the gold of Solomon's temple. And you imagine these Jews, they've been brought up in all this kind of thing, their years of tradition, their history. And where are they now? Well, they're converted to Christ. Well, what wonderful building have they got? They haven't got one at all. What kind of priests have they got dressed in all these vestments? They haven't got any. This is the only thing I'll show you. Well, you know what's under there. Bread and a cup. Baptism. A Bible open. No special rooms. No special robes. No choirs. No trumpets. No lyres. No drums. None of this. How simple it is. How plain it is. How unadorned it is. If I can illustrate this. This is going to offend some of you, but I'll give you the illustration. In the past few days, you've all been staring at television. I don't suppose you were invited. I expect you staring at television, and you saw the funeral of the Queen, didn't you? But if you want to see what temple was like, what Old Covenant was worshipped like, was like, the nearest you'll get to today is what you saw going on that day. Actually, if you want to see it more clearly, you'll have to look at the Church of Rome. You see, these churches are based upon the fathers. That's those men who came after the apostles. And what the apostles did, the fathers did, they went back to the Old Covenant, the Levites and the priests and the buildings, and they drew all that into the New Covenant, into the Church of Christ. And they set up Christendom. Well, what did you see 2 weeks ago? Was it 2 weeks ago? Yeah, I think it was. What did you see? Well, I saw a magnificent, well, if you want to call it that, a tremendous building, didn't you? Splendid building. You saw men dressed in all the colours of the rainbow, didn't you? I did. I'm not talking about the TV spectacular. I'm not talking about the state ceremonial. That was all very magnificent. I don't deny it. But what did you see in a religious sense? The choirs and the robes and the vestments and the splendour of it all. Well, look at what we got here this morning. You got me. And I got you. But can you see how the Jews might have thought, these Jews? They were suffering persecution. We read in Romans chapter 10, Hebrews chapter 10, that their furniture was being chucked out on the street. They were being attacked. You can see how they might tend to go back. So this man is passionately saying to them over and over again, don't go back. Don't leave Christ. Very briefly. The letter to the Hebrews contains more warnings than any book in the New Testament. Very severe warnings. Chapter 2, chapter 6, chapter 10, and chapter 12. It's full of warnings. The commentators are frightened to death by these warnings. And what they do, they find clever ways of getting round the warnings. My advice to you is don't get round them. Stick with them. So when, for example, in chapter 2, the writer says to these people, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation? Don't try and explain that away. Just don't neglect this salvation. When you read in Hebrews chapter 6, how can we bring them back if they crucify Christ again in their minds, if they leave him? Don't try and explain it away. Just don't leave Christ. Hebrews chapter 10. They draw back. They draw back. Don't explain it away. Just don't draw back. And so on. Now, he not only gives them warnings. What he does, he takes all those pictures, those shadows, those elements of the old covenant that I've just described to you, priests and so on. And in every case, he says to them, yes, that was all wonderful in the old covenant, wasn't it? It was all splendid, wasn't it? But don't you realize, he says, that in the new covenant, however simple and bare it might seem, we have something greater, far greater than anything that they knew in the old covenant. Let me explain it to you. How does this letter start? He doesn't start by saying, my dear friends, I hope you're well. The weather here is... No, he doesn't start like that at all. He starts like this. God, who at sundry times and in divers manners, in various ways, spoke to our fathers by the prophets. Ah, the prophets. Ah, we've got Isaiah. We've got Jeremiah, Ezekiel. Oh, God has spoken to us by the prophets. Hath in these last days, these gospel days, spoken unto us by his Son. You want to leave the Son and go back to Ezekiel? I'm not decrying Ezekiel. I'm not pulling him down. But Ezekiel compared to Christ? Ah, but in the old covenant, we had angels, didn't we? We had angels. They ministered the covenant to Moses. Yes, good, yeah. What does he say? Chapter 1 again. He hasn't got very far. I think it's verse 8. God is addressing his Son. And this is what he says to him. God is addressing his Son. This is what the writer of the Hebrews says. And he says this. Thy throne, O God... This is the Father speaking to the Son. Thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. Angels are sent to minister to us, he says in chapter 1. And so he goes on. Ah, but we have Moses. Yeah, you did. Probably one of the greatest generals and leaders and politicians, prophets that ever lived, yes. It's hardly an equal to Moses, but there's one who tops him. What does Hebrews chapter 2 say? Yes, God dealt with the Jews through Moses, but with us, he has sent his Son. Moses, he is a servant. In our covenant, we have the Son. And you go on, chapter 3. What's chapter 3 about and chapter 4 about? It's the land. Oh, must have been wonderful to have the promised land. We've got the promised Christ. Ah, but they had the Sabbath. A day of the week. Excellent. Yep, I agree. But I heard this text. Have you ever heard it? Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Would you rather have a day of rest or an eternity of rest? Would you rather have a day of not going to work, or would you rather have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ? This is what the writer of the Hebrews is saying, chapter 4. What did he say in chapter 5, 6, and 7, and 8, and 9? Oh, we have priests. Yeah. They were men, weren't they? So you went to the priest and you said, I've got this problem, this sin. And the priest looked at you just like your doctor does. Do you know this? When you go to your doctor, you say, oh, I've got this terrible pain or whatever it is. Do you know what he says? So have I. So have I. I've got the same problem. They're not immune, you know. This is what the writer of the Hebrews says. You go to these priests, but they're sinners too. They're sinners too. Nevertheless, they were the sons of Aaron and they were priests. But you know, Aaron died, didn't he? Oh, well, then his son became priest. Oh, well, that's okay, right? But in our covenant, my friend, we have a priest who lives forever, who never dies, and is absolutely without sin. Ah, but we had sacrifices, so you did. Morning and evening, special times throughout the year. Ask yourself the question. This is what the writer of the Hebrews says, chapters, I think it's chapter 9 now. What did he say? Well, ask yourself a question. Why was there a morning sacrifice and an evening sacrifice every day? If the morning sacrifice had taken away sin, really taken it away, that'd have been the end of it. Why did they have to go on doing it? Because it never worked. The blood of bulls and goats never, never took away sin. But Jesus, by one offering, has perfected for most, forever. Do you want to go back from that? Would you rather have bulls and goats and however splendid it might look? Wouldn't you rather have the real thing? In this chapter, chapter 13, I read it to you. The Jews might say, ah, but we had an altar. You ought to have seen the altar in the temple. You ought to have seen the altar with those sacrifices. What does the writer here say? We have an altar. Now, we haven't got one, have we? Yes, we have. It's not visible to the naked eye, no, because our altar is Christ. Christ is all. Now, that's what this text is about. This text is about that. This is the punchline in this argument. This is what the writer is saying. That covenant, and you can find this in Galatians chapter 3, but I suggest you read it in the right translation. The authorized version is very bad here. I'm not making it up, but talk about it if you want to, and I'll explain it to you. But if you look at it in the modern version, you'll see the right translation. The old covenant came in through Moses, yes, for the Jews, and it lasted until a fixed time, until the coming of Christ. But when Christ came, Matthew chapter 5, he fulfilled that covenant and rendered it, Hebrews chapter 8, verse 13, rendered it obsolete. Because he is the reality of all that that covenant spoke of. And this is what the writer is finishing with. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now let me explain. This is a punchline to convince these people that the new covenant is superior to the old covenant. The gospel is superior to the law because Christ is all in all. That's his point. And the point he finishes on this is this point. Well, you can work it out for yourself. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. He sees that as the chief point to drive home what he's been saying. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. What he is saying to these believers who are tempted to go back is, don't you realize that the old covenant, yes, it was magnificent, but it was temporary. It was fading. It was dying out. Look, Aaron died. Moses died. The prophets died. The temple's in ruins. It's gone. And all the rest of it. But Jesus Christ stands impregnable, eternal, unchanging, unchangeable. Now, I'll go back to what I said at the beginning. I don't want you to think I'm pulling down A.B. Simpson's chorus. There is much comfort and joy in a private way, you know, personal way. Yesterday, today, forever, Jesus is the same. All may change, but Jesus never. Glory to his name. That is a comfort to the soul, and I wouldn't deny it. But the writer here is saying something much bigger than that. He's telling these Jews, don't go back away from Christ. Don't leave him. Because he's the reality of all that illustration you saw before. And the one thing he picks on, as I say, is the fact that Christ is unchanging. Therefore, the covenant is unchanging. It never changes. Nothing's going to change it. I don't care what they discover at Cambridge. I don't care what they invent in wherever it might be. Nothing can overthrow Christ and his covenant. Now, I'll just be very brief, but I want to take you through a few texts just to show you. I'll just read them to you to show you that this man, all the way through this letter, has been making this point. Christ is eternal. The covenant is eternal. It's unchangeable. That's a major point to him. The old covenant was fading, temporary, wearing out. But the new covenant, because Christ is the head of that covenant, is unchanging and unchangeable. It's the same today as when he said, it is finished on the cross. All may change, but Jesus never. Let me just remind you, Hebrews chapter 1, verse 8. This is what he said. I've quoted it to you. But about the Son, he says, your throne, O God, is forever and ever. Right in the first chapter, he's hitting this note. Ever, ever. It's a permanent, eternal covenant. Chapter 5, verse 6. He says in another place, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Forever. Aaron was great. Yeah. But he died. Christ forever. Chapter 5 and verse 9. He was designated by God to be high priest in the order of Melchizedek. Although he was and once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation. Not temporary salvation. Not a picture of it, but a reality which lasts forever. This is what he's saying. Then chapter 7. There's a bucket of them here. Listen to him. Chapter 7, verse 17. It is declared you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. Forever. You say, well, you read that. Yeah, I have. It's in chapter 5 and chapter 7. This man never gets tired of saying it, because Christ is a priest forever. I've told you before about George Whitefield. George Whitefield very often preached on the text, you must be born again. And a lady asked him, why, Mr. Whitefield, do you keep preaching on the text, you must be born again? He said, the answer is, madam, because you must be born again. Why do you keep telling us that Christ is a priest forever? Because he is a priest forever, and you've got to get it. You've got to remember it. Chapter 7, verse 21. He became a priest with an oath. You are a priest forever. Verse 24. Because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. Do you think he's making his point? I think he is. Verse 25. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because why? Why can he save completely for all time? Why? Because he ever lives to make intercession. Chapter 9, verse 12. I think this is his point, don't you? 9, verse 12. He did not enter by the means of the blood of goats and calves, but he entered the most holy place. Not a picture of it, not a temple, but heaven itself, once for all, by his own blood, having obtained, what did he obtain? Eternal redemption. Eternal. Who's going to leave that? Don't you pity unbelievers? They don't know this eternal redemption. Can you imagine somebody going to a priest and he absolving them from their sins for now, but tomorrow you've got to go back again? Once you've come to Jesus, my friend, my sins, not in part, but the whole, are gone. I've chosen him from my funeral. Why is it well with my soul? Because my sins, not in part, but the whole, are nailed to his cross and I bear them no more. Chapter 9 and verse 15. For this reason, Christ is the mediator of a new covenant, that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance. Chapter 10, verse 12. This priest, when he had offered for all time, forever, one sacrifice. 10, verse 14. I've nearly finished. By one sacrifice, he has made perfect. Roman Catholics say it's a terrible, damnable error for any man to claim that he's got assurance that he is right with God. That is a damnable, cursed error for any man to claim it. Well, I'll believe the writer to the Hebrews. He says in chapter 10 and verse 14, he says this. I was reading it, I just lost my place. He says it. Because by one sacrifice, one, he has made perfect forever those who are sanctified, being sanctified. And I'll close this just looking at this. How did the writer close his letter? Chapter 13. May the God of peace, who through the blood of the eternal covenant brought back from the dead our Lord Jesus, and so on. One of the sad things about this text, Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever, is that in the modern versions, as far as I can attest, judge, at least the ones I've seen, the modern versions add a word. They want to make it helpful. I don't disagree with the word, but I think they've made a mistake. The original did not have this word in it, but they have added this word to help me. The original is this. Jesus Christ is the same as the Authorized. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Now, that's not a sentence, is it? Do you remember at school, the sentence must have a verb. Well, where's the verb there? There ain't one. Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Bad English. He didn't write in English, but it's bad English. Okay. So the modern translations put the word is in. Jesus Christ is the same. Now, I might be being a bit finicky, but I think they've lost something. I'd rather have what the writer wrote. And this is what he wrote. Jesus Christ. Now think about him. Jesus Christ. Now get your mind on him. The same. You see, there's no is. It's like John 1:17. The law was given by Moses. Now many translations go on and put, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. And that's good, that's excellent. But it's not what John wrote. John wrote this. The law was given by Moses. Yeah, that's wonderful. Grace and truth, though, came by Jesus Christ. The law was given by Moses. Grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. I think these writers, John and the writer of the Hebrews, are so taken up with what they want to say, they don't care about the English. They don't care about the verbs. They don't worry about it. Paul's the same. He often doesn't finish a sentence. Preachers who don't finish their sentences or get confused in their jumbling over their words, if they're passionate, there's life in it. And I think that's what these writers are doing. They want to tell us that Christ is all. So for the third time, don't lose what Simpson wrote. Very good. Jesus Christ is the same. Yes, yes, yesterday, today. Yes, that's wonderful. But I do hope that our eyes will be lifted up to Christ, the unchanging Christ, the unchangeable Christ, the unchanging, unchangeable covenant. And this, brothers and sisters, is our Christ and is our covenant. This is where we are now. This is what we have. Without beginning or decline. This is what Cowper wrote. He has no beginning, he has no decline. He's ever the same. Wherever you see Christ, he's always the same. And his covenant is the same. Yeah. And therefore our salvation is absolutely copper bottom guaranteed. And we won't go back from him, will we? We'll press on that we might know him more. For Jesus Christ is the same. Yes, I won't say is. Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever.